transporte da revente de porra de rir da porra de raquis por sutar.
And now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. I traveled to the nation of New York this week on a goodwill diplomatic mission. As we all know, terror struck that city-state over 5 years ago, destroying the famed double towers that marked that proud nation's shores. The resilience of the peoples of New York has always been an inspiration to us all. The double towers have gone from a giant pile of rubble that I once stood on to a proudly standing chain link fence with pictures of the pile of rubble around it. And they have plans for a new building or buildings scheduled to be completed sometime early in the next century. Like the Egyptians of lore, they plan to move giant house-sized boulders all the way from the famed rock piles of New Jersey to build the soaring sky buildings anew, using Hebrew slaves brought into New York over the years. It should be quite a sight to see when it is complete. Though we will all be long dead. Well, I won't be, because my body is going to be what they call cryogenetically frozen, and I'm going to be held in storage until a time of future danger, when the Constitution is amended to allow me another term in office to come back and help. Thank you for listening. God bless you.
A public service of The Onion, brought to you by weeklyradioaddress.com.
I can play this top thing again. This right here. This. Is there enough reverb on that for you?
Why, that sounds spectacular. Is that a new weekend show?
I played the Aaron one of yours. The big complaint was that there wasn't enough reverb on Aaron's Spanish opening. Jim the Klingon sent me this opening here, and I sat and processed it for like 45 minutes on Adobe Audition, trying to get just the right amount of reverb. That's what I do with my life. I put reverberation sound effects in presets on Klingon openings, like everybody has. It's 4 minutes and 8 seconds after the hour of 11, and it's the month of February in the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming along, making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed and overly ostentatious studios of AM 970, Solid State Radio. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson radio program. 503-733-2970. If you'd like to be part of today's program in a telephonic sense, in a super telepsychotronic sort of way, it's 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. With your comments, your clarifications, your conventions, your 2 cents, your what have you. So your phone number is 503-733-2970 and rick@rickemerson.com. Before we do anything else, I'm just going to say that yesterday was such a stunning success in terms of generating content for the suburban perspective. We're going to do that again today. So rick@rickemerson.com is the email address for that as well. Just put suburban perspective in the subject line. We're going to take your questions for Scotty J and the suburban perspective. And the best question will win a pair of tickets to Monster Jam happening this weekend at the Rose Garden featuring a bunch of trucks driving over, a bunch of things driving over other things. Oh, wait, here we go. Team Latest Harley Davidson presents Monster Jam, brought to you by series sponsors Advance Auto Parts and Ford Trucks. This weekend at the Rose Garden. Featuring a Maniac Jurassic Attack, the Patriot Tropical Thunder, Gravedigger, Bulldozer, Obsession, and Bimart. That's happening this weekend at the Rose Garden. So you just send your question for Scotty J's Suburban Perspective through rick@rickemerson.com, and we'll do that later on in today's program. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email it's rick@rickemerson.com. Here's what is coming up on today's radio broadcast. By the way, I'd like to thank whoever it is that worked in the building that reduced our supply of Vizo from, I think, 12 bottles yesterday to 2. Thank you. Thanks for that. Just me to have an open door policy. There's now a really angry sticky note in the refrigerator. Instructed them to keep their mitts off of it.
They already ruined it.
What?
It's leaving. You guys, whoever you are.
It's going away.
Yep, you lost your privileges.
Yeah. We hope you experience Catholic guilt.
Sons of bitches.
You should feel bad. You took advantage of the Rick Emerson show.
You ruined a beautiful thing.
Share.
Here's what's coming up today. We're going to talk to CNN radio correspondent Rachel McGrath again, speaking of Catholic guilt. Here's the thing. I don't even know what she's talking about. She's Rachel McGrath, who is their news. And here's the weird thing about it today. Is that Rachel McGrath is available from Los Angeles, California. And at, right above that, Jim Roop, available from Los Angeles, California. I mean, I guess I'm glad that he's that I'm looking up and he's there and he's on the clock. That means that they haven't gotten rid of him. But they've never had more than one Los Angeles correspondent in the past. I don't know where that came from.
Maybe it's time for a news team.
Maybe. Jim and Rachel in the morning. So Rachel McGrath is talking about, I guess I should figure it out, a new report showing that something happened. MySpace, cell phones, teenagers, something. I don't really care. The only reason I'm having Rachel on the program today is, well, there's two reasons. A, because she was fantastic yesterday, and B, because I ended a flawless segment by calling her Rebecca. That's what
her
I
name
did.
Is Rebecca.
No, it's not. It's Rachel. Don't you go putting that crap in my head. Damn you. Don't start. I swear to God. You start screwing with me, and I end up calling her Rhonda, Rochelle or something. Have you ever done that with have you ever done that with someone you care deeply about? And you know what I mean. Called them a different name? Yeah, that's a special kind of awkward. This isn't that kind of awkward, but it really is. I mean, I really do pride myself on my interaction with the CNN people. I've never done that to Lisa Goddard or Jim Roop, I don't think, but yesterday. And she came up...
You did the poor Rebecca.
Stop it! Stop it, you damn woman. She came on yesterday, she sounded all great, and of course she had to be British, which means she sounds, you know, she's smart, and I'm dumb. And then I was using a lot of my A material. I made her laugh, I think, in a not control, because she came on with a little prepared joke of her own. Because she is British, and she came on and she said, well, as you can tell from my accent, I'm from Alabama. And she said that, and the reason you know that's a prepared joke is because I said nothing about her accent. It was a preemptive bit of comedy on her part. Probably because she just has to talk to idiots all day. I mean, I'd be curious to know what some of these CNN people sound like when they have to talk to just some jackhole nitwit who's in Kansas. But anyway, so she came on and she was really smart and she was really funny, and I think we had a little bit of a thing, you know, a little bit of a spark, a little chemistry there, not in a creepy way, but just in an anchor person and radio DJ sort of a way, in a little bit of a give and take, a back and forth, a dodge, parry, turn, thrust, and spin kind of a way. And then at the very end of it, and it was right as I disconnected the call, so there was, and if you remember yesterday, and I do, with crystal clarity, with horrifying Technicolor Panavision clarity, do I remember yesterday, I actually tried to pick her up afterward and see if she was still there to clarify it. I know this is an overused analogy in 2007, in the 21st century, but it really was like a bad Seinfeld moment. It really was. And I know everybody says that about every stupid thing in their life they don't care about. You know, every tedious story you've ever had to hear from some nitwit who works down the hall, it was a Seinfeld thing almost. This really was that, though, because I don't care about teenagers. I don't care about people my own age. Why would I care about teenagers? I don't care about teenagers on MySpace. I don't care about teenagers on cell phones. I don't care about teenagers being vaccinated against anything, which is the other big story. I don't care. But here I am getting Rachel McGrath from CNN on today simply so I can call her Rachel throughout the phone call and not end it by calling her Rebecca. That's it. So we'll talk to Rachel McGrath from CNN today. We'll also talk to... Now, here's the... And I labored about this morning. I really did. I had to sit and think long and hard about whether to schedule Jim Roop from Los Angeles, who is also... He doesn't know this yet, but he's also going to be talking about O.J. O.J. All right. About whether to schedule Roop before or after Rachel, just so I can... Because I'm wondering, does he know her? Has he seen her? Have they met? Did he know that she was coming on board? Did he just walk in one day and his cubicle was divided in half and suddenly there was a potted plant and a picture of the UK on the wall?
Maybe he's been told to show her the town and play his jazz saxophone.
Why don't you show her a good time, Jim? You know, I'm actually old enough that I remember
the Brown Derby.
I remember those things happening in radio, actually, where it's like there would be a new, and it was always like a sales chick. Some female account executive would be brought on board, and they would find one of the guys who works in the building. Like, why don't you take her out and show her a good time tonight? Show her what a fun place, you know, Wenatchee can be, you know, or whatever it is. That's probably not the case. We'll talk to Jim Rube about O.J., about Rachel McGrath, and about the dumbest police idea I have ever heard. Let me just say right now, speaking of things I don't care about teenagers. I also don't care about the lives of most people in Los Angeles. I basically care about Jim Rube, and I guess now Rachel, and that's it. There's nobody else in Los Angeles I care about. That whole place can just go up in a fiery ball of the hydrogen for all I care. It doesn't matter. And I think I speak for almost all of us in the room here. L.A. is a bad place filled with terrible people who are not going to contribute anything to society except venereal... Yes?
I've only been there once, but I liked it.
See, that doesn't... You were only there for like 2 days, though.
Yeah, I was there for less than 48 hours. Yeah, and driving around in like a $40,000 car.
That wouldn't happen if you lived there.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Yeah, you were there under, I think, not representative circumstances. You were there in a $40,000 brand new car that you didn't have to worry about damaging while driving around and drinking with Storm Large and a bunch of people from a reality television show.
Yeah, and then hanging out in Hollywood Hills.
And then hanging out at the Chateau Marmont. I do not believe that is a... You know when you watch a weight loss thing and they say, results not typical. Trip, not typical. When you live in Los Angeles, and again, I should say that I've never lived in Los Angeles, but having spent time there, having talked to a lot of people, knowing a lot of people, and Tim can tell you about this, asking Kristen, asking any number of people, the longer you stay there, the more you just begin to hate yourself, everybody around you, everybody you know, your body, the bodies of other people, the sun, the ground, air, leaves, doesn't matter. Start to feel like you're in a bad Bret Easton Ellis novel. Anyway, so I don't care about anything in Los Angeles, but they've done this thing. And it was a joint thing between, I believe, the L.A. Times and the LAPD. And the LAPD seems to create a lot of their own problems down there. I don't really know if any of you follow sort of the trials and tribulations, and I do mean trials, by the way, of the LAPD, the various sort of inanities that go on in that city. The LAPD, they're either very smart or very dumb, because they seem to create a lot of their own work. So they've done with this thing with gangs in Los Angeles, which really has to make some... It's already going to be on some year-end list of the 10 dumbest ideas ever to have been broached by a major metropolitan city. And you know that Portland's going to do it at some point, too. So we'll talk about that. What else? Oh, we'll talk to Lisa Goddard. I don't really know what about. It just seems like a thing we do now. I'm not saying that we... That was... Maybe not the best way to phrase that. I'm just saying no matter what she talks about, she's always scintillating and amusing. And intelligent and insightful. And she called back yesterday to clarify a point. Think about how great that is. That she actually, Lisa Goddard from CNN, took the time yesterday to call back to clarify a point about overseas tax returns. Because she felt that she had passed along not inaccurate, but, you know, sort of the incomplete information. That's why we love her. All right, Hannah wrote a song about her. And then stand outside
That's
her window late at night and then blare the song repeatedly. I'm just saying.
Then you want to sing it to her?
My little inside Adam Sandler voice coming down. We should write a song about Jim Roop. That's what it's a song written about. Speaking of songs and bad songs, while throwing pennies at the window. Yes, thank you, Scotty. Fly a huge. You know what Sporbert should have done? Lisa Goddard's fiance, and I'll guarantee you he didn't. We never asked about the details of their engagement. Now I realize
yes,
that
we did.
Did we? Yeah, she was hiking
or something.
Didn't we ask? In front of a bunch of their friends. And didn't he lead her deep into the woods in manner of a guy who's going to cut you up and then duct tape you back together? But he led her into the woods, and then there was a bunch of hippies around a fire singing Kumbaya, and then he's like, "Will you marry me?" or whatever in his Sporbert voice.
You're just mad because you were sitting on the couch eating Cheetos and looking at my
mind. We were eating microwave popcorn.
Okay.
Sour cream and onion microwave popcorn, watching a made-for-TV movie about Martha Stewart. Will you marry me? Sure. All right. L'amour. Here's what he should have done, though. And remind me to mention this to her later. Lisa Goddard, her fiance, he should have... You know what he should have done? And it's so obvious to me now. He should have had a gigantic custom kite made that said, "Will you marry me?" And then, like, flown it over a hill. Because he's a kite flyer.
I don't think you're the big one in the romance department, Miguel.
All right. Is that a dumb idea?
I don't know.
Moving on. Speaking of bad songs, though, and bad songs that have been written, so you remember we have that guy Jesse from Red Hot Pistol, and Jesse's a guy who called up last week and was like, "Hey, can you help us find a lead singer for our band?" And I said, well, okay. And I couldn't figure out if it's a good idea or a terrible idea. I've now decided I don't care. I'm going to do it anyway. It doesn't matter which kind of idea it is. So Jesse from Red Hot Pistol, they want us to find a new singer for them. Because the music is not bad. They've got the music done. The instrumental tracks are done. They're finished. I think they're pretty much completed. They just don't have a singer. And I guess he fired his singer, or they had the singer, and then they got rid of him, or they told him to pack his crap and get out. I now know why that was the case. He sent me an instrumental track from their band, and then he sent me that same track with the old singer singing on top of it. And I have to tell you, it's the worst piece of music I've ever heard in my life. And that's no knock on the band. That's a knock on you, sir. You, Mr. Lead Singer Man, whoever. And that's coming from a guy who can't sing, okay? You need to find something else to do in your spare time. It's awful. And I hope that he's not a listener. But if he is, I'm not going to do you any favors by shielding you from the truth. Seriously, it's not going to be like your mom who tells you you're funny when you're not, and then you go on stage at the Chuckle Hut, and then some guy throws a rock at your head. Rick Emerson can't spare your feeling. You are a terrible singer. And I know Sarah's giving me that look like maybe I'm going too far. You haven't heard the song. You
all
don't.
Right, I've got to hear it then.
You can't even imagine. So we'll get to that. The Suburban Perspective with Scotty J. Again, get your questions for Scotty J's Suburban Perspective to Rick at RickEmerson.com today. If we select your question for Scotty J, you will win a pair of tickets to Monster Jam. Happening this. In fact, let's. You know what it is. We'll make it extra worth your while. If we select your question for Scotty J's Suburban Perspective today, you will win a pair of tickets to Monster Jam at the Rose Garden and a copy of Farce of the Penguins, now out on DVD, 50 minutes long, rated R, narrated by Sam Jackson, written and directed by Bob Saget. So a DVD copy of Farce of the Penguins and a pair of tickets to Monster Jam if we choose your Suburban Perspective question. There you go. That's what we got, ladies and gentlemen. We're joined today, as are we always, by the yes, Scotty. Everything must go. We're clearing out the inventory by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm kind of excited for the monster truck thing.
Here's the thing is, you've got to go because I got to hear your perspective on it Monday, even if you go and you don't like it. I mean, it really is just
Do they serve beer at it?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, good.
Are you kidding me? It's a monster truck rally. They do everything like that there.
How could you possibly drive a truck without it?
That's what I'm saying. You could probably get beer-infused jerky while
Ooh.
You're there.
That does make me trashy, but that sounds like a fun Saturday night, drinking beer, watching monster trucks like roll over cars.
There's no trashier evening than that. I mean, I'm searching my man, and I'm a guy who knows trash. I can't think of a trashier way to spend your evening because you're in the Rose Garden, which is not a trashy place as such. But I mean, I'm presuming that they, and I have to say it, I'm presuming that they turn it into a giant mud pit. I mean, that they must. Isn't that what they do? They fill it with dirt and then they water it down and then it's just mud.
And jello.
And large bosomed women. And then it's just a bunch of cars, and then it's a bunch of trucks with gigantic. I mean, I don't even want to say that it's really phallic because it's the tires, not so much the truck that's big. So maybe it's not exactly phallic. I don't know what the term would be for. You know what I'm talking about. Well,
yeah.
It's not necessarily
I think we all do, Rick.
It's not necessarily the midget. It's the what was that phrase?
Big black bouncer.
I'd like you to meet this midget and my two big bouncers. Which is a completely non-sexual phrase uttered to Sarah Dillon at one point by Kid Rock. Anywho,
didn't say meet my midget.
No, but that's what you, that was how you summed up the evening.
It was.
That you said, I got to meet his midget and his two big black bouncers. Genius.
It's amazing what you can take and make it sound dirty.
I'm just repeating these, whatever conclusions. Look, if either sounds filthy to you, I would just blame the inside of your head and your own perspective on things. The prism through which you filter my words.
Okay, it's a me problem.
I'm not saying it's you. I'm speaking to anybody. I'm speaking to anybody who might be offended. I'm saying that those words are not inherently filthy. They're not inherently dirty. If they come across that way to you, that is the filter of your own. That is the prism inside your mind. And the way it interprets my verbiage. Rick Emerson takes no responsibility for anything ever at any time. Anyway, so Yeah, but it's just a huge mud pit, and then it's a bunch of cars, and then it's trucks that come out with tires that are like, the tires are like the size of this room. I mean, the tires are as tall as the ceiling. And then they just crush things, and occasionally they turn over and catch on fire and explode. It's fantastic. Sometimes they're tractor pulls. I don't believe
this. Do people get hurt?
Yes. Well, not a
lot.
They
don't die, do they?
Not badly. Not like a really entertaining kind of hurt. Not like NASCAR hurt. Because
like Evel Knievel type of broken bone.
Evel, yes.
I just want to go for the halftime show that you know is going to happen with a bunch of girls like wrestling around in mud or something. It would just be so hysterical.
We can only hope. It's not like traumatic injury. It's not like a Daytona sort of a death. Or what is that? Who is that guy? That guy, what's his name?
Squished against the wall?
Dale Earnhardt.
Yeah.
It's not that kind of an injury. So it's not really satisfying in any way. It's just, Tim's right, it is kind of an Evel Knievel kind of a, oh, my collarbone, but I'm walking it off. And then it's, you know, and then
it's very American.
It really is. No, it is. It's absolutely an American evening. Tim Rowd is working on the following stories for your edification today.
Well, American and Iraqi troops kicked down the door of the Iraqi health minister's office and hauled him away following a murder spree. We'll look into the mind of the misguided astronaut Lisa Nowak again. The Ford Taurus is coming back, and Versace tells Hillary, your pants have to go.
Fantastic. It's 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970. We've got, let's just get this before we do anything else. Let's see. Hello, you went to the Monster Show?
Yeah, I went a couple years back.
To Monster Jam?
Yes, one of the Monster Jams. Oh, man, it was so white trash and rednecky.
Oh, it's fantastic.
But in an awesome way?
But yeah.
It's in a totally awesome way. You're talking, you know, people are drinking and, you know, and these guys are busted out the mullet clip big time. In there wearing their white beaters. And when I went, they actually laid the whole place down in dirt. And then they actually had a demolition car event before the monster truck came out.
Yeah.
And they actually had local people working. Yeah, like somebody went to the junkyard, found the Pinto, you know, broke out all the glass and threw it in there and started crashing it into the other guys.
No, it's great because it's just, it really is just the most high concept kind of event. I mean, you're just going to get two cars, and you're like with the demolition derby beforehand, you're going to get two automobiles, and then you're just going to drive them into each other over and over and over and over again until one of them either can't move or catches fire, and then you're done. And then they get up and they high five each other and they walk off and everybody gets drunk. It's fantastic.
Well, everyone's probably drunk beforehand, but it's like eight cars actually when they start. So it's carnage, it's dirt. You know, they raise a huge dust storm, and you heard crunching and cursing, and everyone else in the stands is cheering and having a great time, and beer spilling everywhere. It was fantastic.
It is. It really is. Pure distillation of all that makes this country great and awful.
Okay, so I've got to go.
You've got to go. You can't. Yeah, if only to give you a recap of it on Monday. All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
All right, there you go. That's whoever that is. All right. 503-733-2970. Rick, just tell Rachel or Rebecca at CNN you were emulating a Don Rickles thing. I thought about that. I thought about a cover story. I thought about trying to create some...
No, I'll call you out.
No, because and we would just sound fake. She's a news person. She'd stop that.
With Rebecca?
Stop it.
Stop it right now.
I'm just going to keep getting it in your head.
All right, you do that.
Well,
by the way, and I would like to note that we don't have that many steps between us and white trash anyway, because I'm doing the program, and to my right here, about 3 feet away, is Sarah's bicycle, which is just sitting inside this
$3 million
studio.
Because you haven't been on your bicycle for the past 3 months.
Speaking of trashy, I've got the beaten down, like, ass forerunner in the parking lot out there. And if you, the radio stations operate on a very simple principle. And when I say radio stations, I'm talking about now the management side of things. The management side, the white-collar side, the sales side especially. When you go to a radio station and you look in the parking lot, all of the cars you see that are sort of name cars, in other words, every time you see, you know, a Lexus, every time you see a BMW, every time you see a Mercedes, those cars all belong to the salespeople. Not because they can afford them, but because the sales managers push the salespeople to buy things they can't possibly afford, because there's no one that works harder than a salesperson who is constantly in danger of having everything they own taken away.
Poor Dennis Kitzenberger, who took his office.
Absolutely. You know, I didn't take his office. His office was given to me.
Yeah.
His office was given to me by somebody who can make those kind of...
Who rooted through his things and put them all in the basement?
I didn't root through his things.
I'm not sure that salespeople should be bringing their things into an office.
Shouldn't you be upselling? All you need is a pair of shoes and a phone book. It's like we used to work with this guy, Trey. God love him. Trey. But, man, the sweetest words to... And Trey was the general sales manager, meaning he was the sort of... He was the a cross between Kevin Spacey and Alec Baldwin and Glengarry Glen Ross. He was the guy kind of at the top of the heap. Not the very top guy, but a guy who marshaled his sales force, as they say. And the sweetest words to his ears were, yeah, I just bought this brand new car. Because in his eyes, all he saw was just endless amounts of red ink flowing out of your bank account and the fact that you were just going to have to be selling 22 hours a day to try to keep a car you purchased that you could not possibly afford. So when you look in the parking lot here, it's just nothing but cars that you know those people can't afford. And so they're just out pounding the pavement all day trying to hold on to their bright, shiny possessions. And then I learned long ago, though, if you work on this side of the microphone, you learn early on not to do that. That's why you look at Tim's car out back. You look at my 4Runner out back. They're cars from 25 years ago that you're just desperately trying to keep together with baling wire and twine. And then Sarah, of course, has bicycles to work. That's the difference between us, because we know that the cash flow could be cut off at any time. By the end of this hour, it might be cut off. Who's really to say? So I haven't bicycled in a few days. This is the other side of how trashy we are.
In a few days?
I bicycled on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. Are you still hurting from that one?
Yes, I am.
Real tough ride there.
I felt the burn.
I'm sure you did.
I hit the wall.
Okay.
And they took the bike rack. There was a bike rack out behind the building here, and they took it away. And I mentioned this the other day because you would come out and your bike frame would still be there, but all the wheels and lights and accessories would be taken.
There's a bum sex going on out there. I don't want to leave my bike out there.
We should clarify with it. She says bum sex. She means with the homeless. It's not a boarding school. Let's make the underclassmen dress as girls. You just go there and it's just a bunch of transient DNA all over your bike seat and so forth. So
have you noticed the astounding number of like articles of clothing that there are out there that are all soiled?
No, what a great word that is. Soiled.
It may have been their spring fashion show.
We should do a homeless fashion show.
That's their runway. Terrible person.
Here's all I'm saying, though. So Sarah's bike, I was just saying, a brand new studio, like a $9 billion studio, and then Sarah's bicycle sitting in here, which is fine. You can do that with one bike. But the thing is, if I bicycle, there's no button.
Oh, you won't be bicycle.
Okay, but if I do, there's nowhere to put it, because Sarah's answer is, just put it in the studio. And there's nothing trashier than that brand new, like, fantastic, plushly carpeted, decorated,
in a broadcast studio. It's always in my living room. I don't think that it's trashy to have a bicycle in here. I'm a classic.
Oh, you missed the look on Tim's face.
I'm not looking at him for a reason.
When you said my bike is always in my living room, the look on Tim's face was this phrase. It was I'm not going to tell her.
I would rather have it in my house than outside in Southeast.
I'm not saying that it's a safer thing to have your bike in your living room. It may be better for the environment to have your car on your lawn. Who knows? I'm just saying... We all know what these things indicate.
Okay, I just think you're projecting, Squishy, because I'm starting to get back in shape.
Well, that's true as well.
All right, we should break.
I don't want the engineers to, like, you know, I got you this brand new carpet that you're putting your bicycles on. I feel bad about it. I won't be bicycling. Let's take a break. We'll come back with Lisa Goddard from CNN. Later on, we have the AM 970 Noon News Hour. Jim Roop, Rachel McGrath, and the Suburban Perspective with Scotty J. Stay there. The Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Rick, pleased to be telling Sarah the Los Angeles that she saw was not so much the real Los Angeles. L.A. is a slow-working hellmouth. You arrive with bright eyes and even brighter hopes. Then slowly Los Angeles' hands of entropy begins to erode your hopes, your desires, your self-worth, and finally your soul. Case in point. How should we proceed with this? Case in point. And then he's referencing someone who, by the way, was described by Sarah, not by me, as being, this is from Aaron, described by Sarah as being my favorite bridesmaid. That is not a statement that I made.
If Lara wasn't there, you would have high-fived me and agreed.
Then we would have chugged a beer. Then we would have shotgunned a Pabst.
Oh, you know it.
Anyway.
I know your secret shame.
Rick's favorite bride is apparently not so secret, since you said it like a foot away from my wife. Rick, I know which bridesmaid you like. Rick's favorite bridesmaid for my wedding when living in Portland finally got, let's see, felt fine about herself. Said woman after a few years in L.A. constantly complains about her fat, her big feet, her crooked teeth, her wide hips, her not white enough smile, and all manner of problems. Well, she does have crooked teeth. She doesn't.
I thought you didn't look at her that quickly.
She doesn't. I'm just saying. I'm just being a jerk. And all manner of problems she did not have until moving to Los Angeles. No, it's a bad place. It's you shouldn't go there.
We did get lost in Compton our first night.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic.
We took a wrong turn.
You were the cautionary tale.
We were going south instead of north. No, and then we were going to get out at a gas station and buy some beer, and all of a sudden we realized that everyone around us were sitting in their cars, not getting out of their cars.
Yeah.
And then they'd go in one by one, follow each other. We're like, maybe not. And then looked at our map the next day. Yeah, we were right in the middle of Compton.
Oh, man, my friend Todd had that happen where his dad, like, took a wrong. His dad was going to visit him, and his dad took a wrong turn and ended up in this really terrible part of, and terrible is a relative statement, by the way, this terrible part of Oakland. And it was a whole lot of, you know, calling, where are you, Dad? What? Look around. What do you see?
Oh, man, there's a bunch of people walking toward the car.
Okay, Dad, lay it. Do you have your gun?
Yes.
Okay, get the gun out of the glove box. Lay on the floor of the car. I'll be there in 20 minutes. I mean, which is, I swear to God, we'll get Lisa Goddard in like 30 seconds, but I got to say this final observation about this. That happened to me once in Los Angeles, too. And I still, to this day,
We got the 405, and there's this one road, and we didn't know whether to take a right or a left.
Take the one less traveled.
And so we took the right, and then all of a sudden it getting a little seedier and darker. And we're driving around in this car that we had just picked up, you know, that we don't know how to drive because it's just enormous. And
yes.
Yeah.
I took the highway off ramp less traveled, and that has made all the difference. I took a wrong turn somewhere, and it's that thing where we're driving along, and I'm like, well, this doesn't look like, have you seen Six Flags, you know, or whatever? And
I was so late, I'm like, this isn't how I pictured it. Where's Sunset Boulevard?
Where's the Staples Center? And, you know, you're driving, yeah, totally. You're like,
is this West Hollywood?
Is this the Roxy? And then you're driving along, and you're whatever, and it's just more and more pawn shops, and like more and more bars on the windows, and more liquor stores. And then this is how I knew we'd gone too far. We drive through, we stop at a red light, and it's exactly like my friend Todd's dad, same thing. Stop at a red light. Bunch of guys, a bunch of youths, toughs, as they used to be called, standing on the various street corners at this four-way intersection. We stop at a red light. We're just there. All of the various youths just sort of turn, and like sort of like AI villains in a video game, they just turn and they notice us, and then they just start slowly walking toward us. Like zombies, like brain-eating zombies, and it was just like, let's go, no, let's go. Just no, I know it's red, let's just go. So
Lisa and I went back to the same area a couple days later because we were looking.
In daylight.
Yeah, in daylight. And we were looking, every single thing had bars on the windows, and we went to this Target that had a full-on, like, huge, like, 8-foot gate all around it, so they would actually lock up the Target on the outside, and that was right across the street from the 7-Eleven.
Good times. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now, speaking of crime-ridden hellholes, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the Hill! CNN radio correspondent, I'm killing time because we can't find the sounder.
It's not playing.
I'm continuing to speak in a loud voice as we wait for the sounder to kick in. As we wait for the introductory music for Lisa Goddard to take effect.
Why is it not playing?
Wait for the overture, the prelude. As we wait for this music to begin playing, I will continue to speak in a Carnival Barker-esque delivery. Speaking loud and long about nothing in particular until I can welcome Lisa Goddard from the Hill. Hello.
Wow, thank you.
It's my only real skill. How are you?
Hey, I'm okay. How are you?
I'm fine. I don't know what was going on there, but
Somebody messed with my button.
It's what I do. We're just sharing. I realized as we were swapping tales of high crime areas that we had you on hold because you said that you live in the single worst block of D.C.?
Yeah, for muggings. But, I mean, you know, there's worse ones for shootings.
So
I'm the worst for muggings.
So it's all relative. Well, we've all got to
be
number one at something, Lisa.
That's what, exactly.
It's an off-topic question. I mean, does it bother the government of Washington, D.C., by which I don't mean the president. I mean, like, the people who run the District of Columbia.
Mayor, yes.
Does it bother them that city is just such a cesspool?
Oh, you know, I got to stick up for Washington. It really has gotten a lot better for what it's worth. It really has, but it does bug them that they've got a bad reputation. And, you know, I could go on about this for a long time. It definitely, we benefited not very much from having some leaders that like to do drugs. for a while. By the way, Marion Barry, our former mayor, yes. He is actually a city council member now. And he has, now there's a motion to revoke his parole.
Didn't he get busted for something else the other day? Did I read that?
Well, his problem right now is that he's not filing his taxes.
Oh, yeah, you got to do that.
Yeah, he's got to.
That's a law.
He really doesn't, he just doesn't want to. So now he may be heading back to the Hooskow.
Well, you know, A, the bonus
his
points.
Probation, rather, has been revoked.
I'm glad you used the word Hooskow. And B, I don't even know where to begin with Marion Barry. What a strange saga that the life of Marion Barry has been. I mean, is that really, how do I put this? Is that a D.C. thing? Is it just that the vibe is so much different there that, like, a guy could be literally on film smoking crack and then, like, later, you know, just be reelected. Everybody loves him. I mean, it's whatever. I mean, and I'm not passing it. Rick Emerson is not a Puritan. I'm not passing judgment. I'm just saying it seems a little odd.
Well, this is sort of how I understand it. I think you ask anyone from D.C., you're going to get a different opinion on this. But I think that there's a section of D.C., District 8, which Marion Barry represents. It's southeast. It's called Anacostia. It's on the other side of the Anacostia River. That section of D.C. has been so universally ignored and so universally just kind of crapped upon for so long that there really haven't been a lot of leaders that have stood up for it in any way. And I think Marion Barry, he really does have a certain charisma that works there. And he did do a couple of things here and there, but more out of it, he really built this kind of network of getting people jobs. He owed them favors, they owe him favors, that kind of thing. And in that area that really was otherwise ignored, it really launched him into power. And there's a lot of people who are still grateful to him, and that he has that sort of network of kind of cronyism or, you know, favor.
Well, it's fine.
World favor bartering.
You know what? And again, it's hard to hold on to your job in even the most stable of industries. And the fact that that guy can do it in politics, again, after having been, you know, a crack smoker and so forth, you know, whatever. I salute a guy who can do that, and he seems to be beloved by the community he represents. And that's, you know, it's kind of like, in a weird way, it's sort of like that, and I know that we're totally off the point here, but I know that you are kind of a political junkie, so it doesn't really matter. I know that it's similar to Gavin Newsom, who's the mayor in San Francisco, who is embroiled in that whole thing right now because he spent the last year like putting it to his campaign manager's wife. From what I can see, the general consensus in San Francisco seems to be sort of like, what can you do? So, you know, as long as the people you're representing don't have a problem with the job you're doing, it seems like you can pretty much, you could be on film kicking kittens off a bridge somewhere. It doesn't really matter.
Well, I could go on and on forever about D.C. I mean, the federal government controls D.C.'s budget. It's just ridiculous what D.C. has to do to get anything done. Like any city already has to deal with its own bureaucracy. We have to deal with that as well as all of Congress.
Well, just
that's how you end up with a city that we're now doing a lot better, but we got a little ways to go still.
It is good to have pride in where you live, Lisa. And you know, and you could be worse. You could be in Baltimore. So you know,
yeah, I mean, or we could not have any representation in Congress. Oh, we don't.
Well, at least you're allowed to buy guns to protect yourselves. Oh, I guess not. Oh, damn.
Yeah,
all right. Well,
sad.
I don't even. Hey, let's talk about Nancy Pelosi, who just she. Yes?
Yes.
I don't even know.
You can pull up the House debate right now. Maybe that's what they're talking about right now. Let's see if we can hear them. Oh, nope, that's not that. I don't know what that is. So maybe I got to switch my sources here. But yeah, they are talking about, you're talking about the plane, huh?
What are you going to talk about? Because I was going to bring up something different. What are you talking about?
Oh, really?
Is this the fact that she wants her own plane to fly around in?
This is what I did not want to talk about because it ranks high in the most annoying debates of the year for me. But I understand the concern. I mean, we need to watch every dollar that our federal officials spend. But it seems to me Republicans are definitely saw a weakness here when they realized that Nancy Pelosi was going to be using or potentially using this large plane to fly from Washington to San Francisco because the military said, you know, we think you need security because you're second in line to the president. Now, there's a lot of dispute over, did she request the plane? Did the military tell her to take the plane? Did she want the super large plane or did she ask for a smaller plane? And, you know, Pelosi says basically, the military told me I should take this plane. I didn't ask for any specific plane. I just said, okay. And she did say, I asked if my family could come along on this trip. Now, of course, these planes cost tens of thousands of dollars an hour, some of them. So it is a significant fact that she asked for her family to come. But you wonder, is that added expense? It's not clear. We don't know if she was volunteering to pay for him or not. But Republicans are going to town with this, saying, oh, Nancy Pelosi's living in the lap of luxury.
Yeah, well.
And, you know, there might be a fair criticism in here, but it's really gotten carried away at this point. So we can see if they're hearing
trying to change all the rules, to change everything says.
Yeah. That's,
someone sounds
that's
angry.
They're really yelling and going to town on this.
Hey, would you see? Tell him I said hi, and just to relax a little bit about everything. Rick Emerson said just to try to calm down.
There was
a
point where they were yelling over. One congressman was yelling about the fact that he has to sit in a middle seat when he goes back to his district in Georgia.
Oh, please, this is just a sop to the political junkies out there. This is all just the ghost of John Sununu, because he's the guy that got tagged for using all of that air travel for like flying his dog somewhere or whatever the hell it was, like back in the 80s.
Check that out. I'm embarrassed. I don't know.
John Sununu, he was, anyway. Well, so there's that, and then I know that Nancy Pelosi's trying to stake out this business about global warming and climate change, which somebody just turned on a switch somewhere, and now we're talking about global warming every day after not talking about it for like a decade. Is it true? Well, how do I put this? Al Gore claims that the Bush administration is paying scientists to lie about global warming.
Yeah, that one I don't know. I know that he's saying that, and I haven't seen a direct response from the White House yet on that, and I don't know where exactly he's getting that from.
That seems like the sort of thing, I'm not saying it's necessarily true, that seems like a pretty specific statement. That doesn't seem like the sort of, sources close to whoever, imply that blah, blah, blah. You know, he's coming out of it actually just saying that the George Bush's administration is paying people to lie about global warming.
Yeah,
so,
I think with any politician, you just have to be careful, especially anyone who said he authored the internet. Al Gore is known sometimes he'll take a fact and he might maybe in his mind exaggerate it a little bit as he's explaining it. As he gets in his charisma vibe, sometimes he does that. So I have no idea. I don't know. I'm not saying that isn't true or that it is. I don't know.
All right. And I know
lots of folks talking about it. You're right.
And we've just gone all over the map today. But just real quickly before we do this, I know that, does George W. Bush have two separate budgets? Is there like a regular, normal, everyday budget and then like a budget that's just for fighting terrorism? Is there like some supplementary budget that he's got? Because I know he's making the, as they say, he's making the pitch for that with Michael Chertoff.
That's right. Well, there are a number of different ways of slicing the budget. There is a budget for each year, and then on top of that, he often asks for a supplemental, which is supposed to be for emergencies that come up. Often that can include a hurricane, a disaster, or a war that happens in the middle of a budget year after you've already passed that budget. But the Iraq War has been put into a supplemental year after year after year, so that it doesn't have to factor in necessarily to the baseline when you look at how much the budget's increasing and also sort of deficit issues. It adds to the deficit, but it depends on how you look at the long-term deficit. But blah, blah, blah. So in the supplemental, he has at some point asked for money that would go to the Department of Homeland Security, for example, for what he calls the war on terrorism. But the budget right now, Michael Chertoff, the head of the Homeland Security Department, is on the Hill today defending their budget request, and that is actually for the regular budget, as I understand it, for the budget that would start next year. I think in October this budget would start.
All right. And by
your question, I feel like that was worthless, boring information.
No. It's what? No, it was not, and not in any way. I mean, boring is the part that you kind of can't control sometimes. Sometimes, and not everything is a Wayne Newton observation. So,
nice.
You do get points so much for calling back yesterday to clarify a point about tax rates for overseas workers. Because the information you gave was inaccurate, but because you felt it was not complete enough. So really, that is above and beyond the call of duty.
I'm embarrassed that I don't. I'd hope to find out the exact income and different, I don't know, folks who live overseas that are your listeners probably know how it all works, but I just know when you live overseas, you don't necessarily have to pay as much.
Well, taxes. I'm embarrassed that I didn't know Wayne Newton, so it's a wash, you know what I mean?
Sweet.
All right. Lisa Goddard from the Hill, ladies and gentlemen. We will talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right, there you go. Thank you. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. All right. It is talk. I don't even want to take this. It is talk radio, so these calls are inevitable. If you've listened to talk radio for any length of time in your life, we'll see if he's still there. Chad.
Hey, man, I know Wayne Newton.
Do you actually know Wayne Newton?
Well, no, I met him and Bob Hope.
Really? Did he try to kiss? Did he kiss you? Did he hug you? Did he give you a firm handshake?
I did shake his hand, and I found it rather limp, so I was not impressed.
You know, Wayne Newton is one of those guys that, like, I think there's some weird thing in his psyche where Wayne Newton seemed so effeminate for so long when he was kind of coming up in the industry that he really has overcompensated over the years by really working out and just is a huge, beefy wall of a man now. I mean, he's a big man. Isn't he in person physically?
Well, I met him when I was 14, and I was already taller than him, so...
Really? Is that because he seems very muscular, because he had that terrible high-pitched voice when he sang Donka Shane and so forth. All right. And how old was Bob Hope when you met him?
Oh, geez, man, he was already so feeble. I mean, he had to be in his 80s. I mean, like, I felt like I was going to break his hand just touching it. I mean, I met him through my grandpa, who was an Air Force general, and there was some big Air Force reunion thing in Vegas that we went to when I was a youth, so... I mean, that's how I met both the guys. They were both there entertaining the troops and whatnot. But,
fantastic. All right.
The reason why I called, I caught your comment.
Yeah.
That, you know, paying taxes is a law, and I might be having a Clyde Lewis moment. You might want to call him up and see if he's backing me up on this, but I have heard it posited that there is absolutely no law that says we got to pay taxes, and that was the whole thing with the Freeman Militia, like in Montana. Like, they quit paying their taxes and started making their own money. And
yeah, but that's stupid.
Well,
but that's just retarded.
I know. Well, hey, I don't mind pitching in to keep the roads up and stuff like that. I mean, I pay my taxes. I'm self-employed, and I generally don't end up...
You know, if you don't pay your taxes, the government comes and they put you in a very small place for a long time. That kind of implies to me that it is illegal not to do it. And, I mean, isn't the U.S. code... I don't have, like, the U.S. annotated code in front of me, but I'm pretty sure that the... I can't even believe I'm talking about this. I'm pretty sure the U.S. code actually has a subset that is the Internal Revenue Code that does mandate the method by which taxes are collected, which means that it is a law. Yeah. I mean, am I making that up?
But it's not a constitutional law that you have to pay taxes. That's the thing. And
it's not in the Constitution that I have to stop at red lights, but you have to.
Well, that's state law.
All right. I can feel my brain turning to dust. I'm not saying it's not like maybe a thing that somebody somewhere wants to talk about, but really,
I think it's a funny thing, and I've actually heard stories of people challenging the government.
Yeah, but those people end up going to jail. Those people end up going to jail and being beaten by car thieves. So really, do you want to cast your lot with them?
No, I never have. I was just calling up to...
I'm not trying to poke fun. I'm just saying you will hear these people sometimes. These are like the Dale Gribbles of the world. And these are the same guys who are like, well, you know, if you get one of them fancy traffic tickets by that radar camera, all you have to do is go to court and ask the radar camera to testify against you. And because it can't, the ticket has to be dropped according to law. That's what we call a bunch of crap. And the judge will laugh at you, and then you'll be $300 shorter. And, there you go.
Well, you can cover your face when you're going through and they're taking your picture.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Chad.
Bye, Don.
Thank you. All right. Oh. Thank you. Okay. That's Chad. All right. It's 503-733-2970. That's and I'm not trying to poke fun at Chad. I do, you know, it's a little gentle fun, perhaps. If you work in talk radio, you just hear those. And we get fewer of them on this show than we normally. Look, phones are ringing. Here it comes. Here comes the freaking the Winnebago militia brigade. Rick, I have no authority to obey any court that has a gold fringe flag. Federal Reserve isn't part of the government. All right. It's 503-733-2970. Every time I hear one of those calls, though, it's like flashing back to 1994. Because that's all talk radio was in 1994. It was just a bunch of guys calling from a trailer in the middle of Pocatello, surrounded by a bunch of other guys who called them leader. Carrying a bunch of guns and insisting that they didn't have to pay their child support. It's 503-733-2970. We should break here. We'll come back with the AM 970 Noon News Hour with Tim Riley. Later on, we have CNN Radio correspondent Jim Roop about OJ and the worst idea I've ever heard from a police enforcement agency. Also, Rachel McGrath, The Suburban Perspective, and the worst song ever. You say there's the Rick Emerson Show.